specific sequence of measurements in the XY plane of the block sphere, so orthogonal set basis. And in doing so, you teleport your input state across these horizontal chains, and in doing so, are acting on them with the universal set of operations. The key idea behind this is known as one-bit teleportation. It can be understood by just considering a pair of qubits along one of these horizontal chains. On top here, we have the graph representation below the equivalent quantum circuit. The first qubit is initially in some arbitrary state psi, whereas the second qubit is in the plus state. We apply the control Z operator. And then we measure the first qubit in the psi basis. These are its eigenstates. It's in the block sphere, xy plane of the block sphere, but rotated from the x basis by some angle of psi. With outcome m, and this is equivalent to performing this basis transformation and then measuring in the z basis with outcome m. The result of this measurement is that the input state psi is teleported to the second qubit along with this basis transformation, h times the z rotation by angle of psi. And this is universal for building single qubit unitaries. We've also got these Pauli X byproducts that may or may not be there depending on the measurement outcome. Those can be handled by a feed forward measurement process. We're going to ignore that for now just for simplicity. So just to get a better idea of how this works, if we look at a 5-qubit chain where the first is in the arbitrary state psi and the remaining are all in the plus state, we've entangled all these CZs. When we measure the first one in C, this state gets teleported to the second qubit. We measure that one in the eta basis, and this is what we have on the third qubit, and so on. These build up. Finally, we do a measurement in the x basis that just gives us a Hadamard at the end to destroy this Hadamard. And so the state that ends up on this last qubit is actually just equal to this. And so we've got three Euler angles, and that's an arbitrary single qubit rotation. Cluster states can be generated quite efficiently in a couple of ways. The most common is to induce some sort of Ising interaction between the nearest neighbors in a physical grid of qubits. Some proposals have been put forth for quantum dots, superconducting circuits, optical lattices, possibly others that we're not aware of. And we saw, obviously, ions. The Hamiltonian would look something like this. It's just an Ising interaction with some external fields. This generates a time evolution operator that applies phases that are conditional on the states of pairs of qubits. This is the phase that you apply. It's equal to the product of the intensity and the duration of the interactions. So ideally, we want this product to be exactly pi. Exactly. That would give us controlled Z gates simultaneously on all pairs of qubits. Now, something similar can be done with specifically with optical lattices using fold collisions by choosing the hyperfine levels that you use to encode your zeros and ones such that each one is confined in an orthogonal polarization sublattice. These polarization sublattices can be shifted relative to one another so that the one state from the zero or from the j atom overlaps with the zero state from the j plus one atom, and we get this collisional phase shift picked up so that we return these back, and on the 1-0 state, we get this entangling phase e to the I phi. Again, this is just the product of the intensity and duration of the interactions. We want to get exactly pi out of this, which would give us controlled z's applied to all qubits, and in this case, flanked by Pauli X operators that really they're of no concern. They can just be taken care of by applying some single qubit unitaries to all of your qubits. Well, the big problem that comes here is imperfect timings. No matter how good your control is over these interactions, I mean, surely you're still going to be off by some small systematic phase error theta here. And so instead of controlled z's, you have these imperfect controlled z's, a controlled phase with this phase here. And this is what the matrices would look like. And of course, it's systematic, so we have the same theta for all entanglement lengths. Now, what does this do to the one-bit teleportation that we need? Well, when we have these imperfect links now, instead of having this nice output, unitary output, we get this jump state that depends in some non-trivial way on phase error theta. The good news is that the corresponding fidelity loss will be very small provided theta is small, and we would expect it quite possible to get it small. The bad news is that for one-way quantum computing, you need to perform a long concatenated sequence of these one-bit teleportations over which these fidelity losses rapidly build up to an unacceptable level, even when theta is very, very small, as was shown to be the case by Martin and his collaborators back in 2005. Our solution is to do something sort of like entanglement purification by combining two imperfect links to produce one perfect link. So we take three qubits here that are entangled with the x's flanking the imperfect CZs. We measure the middle qubit in the x space of M2. Now, if we get an outcome of zero, well, that's really not helping. We still fail. We haven't accomplished anything. But if we get an outcome of one, then we succeed and we get perfect CZ operators between qubits one and three. We also get some superfluous Pauli Z and Hadamard. And the key to this success is that the phase error in this case is manifested as a harmless global phase. As you can see there.
Sorry, does this depend on having the same theta on both?
Yes. Yeah. It only works for a systematic phase error. So now that we've established this perfect entanglement link, we can perform one-bit teleportation. And we do this measurement in the C basis. And that's going to teleport our input state to the third qubit, along with the said rotation, and again, a Pauli byproduct that may or may not be there. If we weren't to handle it, we're going to ignore it. So we call this stochastic teleportation for obvious reasons. It doesn't succeed all the time, and it's probabilistic. But we know when it succeeded. Success is flagged by the measurement outcome of that middle qubit. And this is the probability of success with half cosquared theta. As one would expect, it's a maximum when theta is zero, so that you had a perfect link to begin with. And as theta goes to pi, meaning your links were not even there, this goes to zero. But something really interesting here is that even if theta deviates from pi ever so slightly, meaning you had just the weakest entanglement to work with, you still have a finite probability to produce a perfect entanglement. Another thing to note is that combining just imperfect CZs like this alone doesn't seem to work for some reason, and we still don't fully understand this. In order to do this global phasing, we need to have these Pauli X operators flanked. So just looking back to our quantum circuit, indeed, you know, that's the entanglement type that we had. This operation occurs naturally with cold collisions and optical lattices, as I showed earlier, but it's also possible with Ising. All one has to do is in the Hamiltonian just replace that second minus sign with a plus sign, as has been done here, and that's just tantamount to changing the configuration of external fields. Why two imperfect links? Why not four? Indeed, you can do this with four imperfect links. You measure the middle three on X, and you'll succeed for outcomes 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, and 1, 1, 1. In this case, your probability of success is a little bit not quite as good, 3 eighths goes to the 4 feet over 2. We get an interesting dichotomy here in the outcomes that if your successful outcome sequence contains an odd number of 1s, you get a byproduct of Pauli Z, and otherwise you don't. We need to keep track of the byproducts to do 1 with 1. Why stop at 4? Why not 6? Why not 8? Yeah, sure, you can actually do any even number of imperfect links, so you're measuring some odd number n of qubits, and you'd be measuring all of the first and last qubits in the chain, all on the x basis. Larger sequences that are successful can be predicted from smaller sequences. Using a couple of rules, one's composition. You take two smaller successful sequences, sandwich an arbitrary outcome x measurement between them. That'll give you new sequences. Another rule. Take a smaller sequence with an odd number of ones in it, sandwich it between zeros. That works. The combinatorials get messy. In the end, this is what you get for your probability of success if you measure n qubits. Ignore this. The important thing is that for large n scales, it's going to be square root of n. So it's going down fairly slowly. The real problem here, though, is, well, there's actually a missing Hadamard. One-bit teleportation for its output has this Hadamard acting on the output state. But the stochastic teleportation, you may have noticed, did not. All it had was the Z rotation. And whereas Hadamard times Z rotation is universal for building single qubit unitaries, the Z rotation on its own is not. So we're missing a Hadamard right here. We want to figure out how to get one in there. The source of this problem is that these Hadamards here appeared superfluously when we purified that entanglement link. And being its own self-inverse, When a Hadamard comes through the single qubit teleportation, this Hadamard kills it. Well, one might expect, okay, maybe you could just manually apply a Hadamard after you purify your link. Unfortunately, you can't do this. To understand why, we need to consider a sequence of two concatenated stochastic protocols, so shown here. And so we have these purified links, and this Hadamard here is trapped between two controlled Z operators, meaning that if we were to manually apply a Hadamard in the interest of killing this off, it would have to commute past the CZ. Hadamards don't do that. In fact, there's no combination of single qubit unitaries you could apply to pull this off. To better understand why that is, consider the case where instead we have a plus here instead of some arbitrary psi. Then what we get after this is a GHZ3 that is 000 plus 111, cat state. And in fact, if we generalize this to n concatenated protocols, we get GHZN, which, as many of you may know, is, for one thing, not a universal entanglement resource for one-way quantum computing. For another thing, it's not equivalent to a cluster state by local operations and classical communication. So no single qubit unitaries can be applied to fix this. But we can get beyond LOCC by exploiting selective entanglement, despite the fact that our entangling operation is global and it's entangling everything at once. The key observation here is that eigenstates of the pairwise operator will not become entangled by it. For instance, if we're just looking at two qubit states, if the first qubit is in zero, we have no 1-0 component, so it doesn't pick up this phase. Same thing with if the second qubit is in one, and finally, if we have the exact state 1-0, then the phase would be global and it won't entangle. So how can this help us? Well, consider this chain of 13 qubits where we cleverly decide to rotate these qubits into these states to initialize them before the entangling operation. Then when we entangle, only these disjoint plus chains are going to become entangled. All other pairs are in eigenstates of this pairwise operator. So then when we apply our protocol to purify the entanglement links, we're getting two links that are disjoint. And so these Hadamards here are not trapped. We don't have a CZ past which we need to commute. So we can then just manually apply Hadamards, kill these off, and we'll get disjoint two-qubit cluster states that are perfect, that don't have phase error. At the same time, we rotate these qubits into plus states and these into states that won't be affected by the next entangling operation. And so when we entangle again, now we're just entangling this chain here, connecting the disjoint two-qubit cluster states. I think you probably see where I'm going with this now. We then do this measurement on here. Again, we're assuming all the while that every one of these is generating successful outcomes. I'll get back to this. And okay, now we do have a trapped Hadamard, but it's not too big of a deal. We can just measure this qubit that links the trapped Hadamard with this perfect cluster to the cluster state, and that just produces a perfect CZ regardless of outcome. So we get a 3-qubit cluster state. This generalizes very straightforwardly to n-qubit cluster states. Okay, well, what if we fail? So suppose that, you know, when we did this measurement, that we got a measurement outcome that signaled that it had failed. It hadn't produced a perfect entanglement link. We can actually just reinitialize into the plus, re-entangle, because it's only going to entangle those, and then re-measure. And in fact, this can just be repeated until you get success, until your measurement flags success. So, and expeditious measurements, they can all be performed simultaneously on all of your disjoint 5-qubit chains. As the computer scientists might say, this is at constant depth. So when you're doing this, the average fraction of chains that are successfully purified with each step is just the same as the probability that any one of them is purified, which for measuring 3 qubits was shown there. And the average number of steps to attain a desired fraction is given by this expression here, if f is the fraction you want. So this is what that looks like for some modest values of your phase error theta. In practice, I would expect you could do better than this smaller theta. But even if you want something really high, say 0.99 of your links successfully put together, all you need is 10 to 15 steps. Something like that. Okay, so this generalizes straightforward to 2 and 3D. You entangle a checkerboard pattern of 5-qubit chains. You then purify those into two-qubit cluster states, then you connect those two-qubit cluster states by doing basically the same process. So it's going to look something like this. We entangle those, and then we create this checkerboard pattern of disjoint two-qubit cluster states. We connect them by initializing these back into plus, entangling, doing that again, and we get this big cluster state here. So just to finish up here, we have a constant overhead of 32 qubits per qubit in the cluster state. It's large, but it's not affecting scalability, obviously. One nice feature is that we can directly construct the real space quantum circuits that are needed for one-way quantum computing without having to carve things out to set basis measurements. We just choose which two-qubit cluster states to entangle. Also, you know, by the same token, you could make all kinds of other cryptograph states. So to conclude, we have this imperfect entanglement resulting in systematic phase errors. We can get around this by, one, combining imperfect limits via measurements or for purification, and two, selectively entangling by preparing the states properly. Future work, we want to look at constructing encoded cluster states to provide some other additional fault tolerance to other faults other than just this specific one. It also seems like it may be possible to do this with multi-qubit addressing. And finally, just want to build a better understanding of why this really works, because it's weird. Like, so much all simple. Also, I'd like to thank my PhD student, Dr. David. Well, if any random errors in your entangling operation, this can't do anything for it. This doesn't prove anything at all. This is all. I mean, you know, one would expect there will be random errors, but there will also be a systematic component. This is only going to remove the systematic component. Just one small step.
Probably you said it, but I want to ask again. I'm asking about the overhead. Mm-hmm. Say the number of operations you need versus the length of the, let's talk about 1D, versus
right.
the length of the chain that you want to create.
Mm-hmm.
So you had this multiplicative factor of 32 here. I mean, it's
right. Right.
That's overhead.
Pardon? Sorry.
You have a multiplicative overhead?
I was
somewhat surprised. I thought you had the polynomial overhead. So that the number of operations would scale with some power of the length of the chain you want to create. I want to know what the overhead
is. Sure. Yeah. So in terms of the number of operations, provided you're just looking for some fraction of these chains to be created, since you can do these all simultaneously at constant depth, if you just need to attain some certain fraction so that you can create horizontal chains, albeit zigzagging through your cluster. You can attain this certain fraction, which obviously has to be above a percolation threshold or something like that. But given some fraction, it's just a constant number of steps, provided you actually have the equipment in there to perform all of these measurements simultaneously. The second thing is the number of qubits. That's just a multiplicative factor of 32. But the number of operations, provided it's just a fixed fraction. That you want to fix up. Since you can do all of these operations simultaneously, the number of time steps is just a multiplicative factor as well.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Just wondering whether there's any connection to the composite false techniques that people in art use. Basically, they can get cancellation of systematic errors.
To be honest, I'm really not familiar with. Is this something like Echo?
Yeah.
Okay. We haven't explored that, but I would think there should be some sort of connection there, because again, it's a systematic thing, and you're using two things to remove it, and maybe that somehow connects into why this thing gets pulled out as a global phase. But certainly that'd be interesting to check out.
Okay. There are no
further
questions. Then let's thank all of the participants.